All right. So, looks like we're live on both now, on all YouTube, right. On Spaces. Hi, everybody.
Hello. All
right, so week two, episode two.
And now our Twitter audience should be able to hear us as well. Yeah, another Texans podcast, episode two. Storm, how are you doing tonight?
Good, man. How are you? I know we were meant to do this on, Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah, you can blame the thunderstorms across the southeast for delaying my flight multiple times. But, yeah, we made it. We're going to talk some football tonight. I'm excited. And we finally do get a Houston Texans football game this week, which I think we've all been looking forward to quite a bit. For anyone listening who has not listened before, my name is John Krempler. I'm the lead analyst at the Texans Wire. And my co-host, Patrick Storm, he is a contributor at the Texans Wire and also has been at training camp covering the team. We're coming at you live from YouTube, but also since historically we've been hosting this on Twitter Spaces, we're live on Twitter right now as well. For anyone on Twitter, definitely recommend you come join us on YouTube. Make sure you like, subscribe, comment. We're excited to kick this platform off. And, yeah, excited to talk to you guys about the Texans.
Yeah, man. Like you said, we actually have real football this week. And I say real, I mean it's preseason. But, you know, it's live action. We'll see the starters. We'll see CJ Stroud and a bunch of the starters for a good portion of the game or the first quarter at least. And then we roll into the twos and the threes and, you know, it's going to be fun.
I mean, it may just be preseason, but it's going to be the most we've learned about D'Amico Ryan's version of the Houston Texans. Frankly, we'll learn more about them than we have it on any other day. And frankly, I think the game experience will be more telling to us than probably – I mean, maybe if people have been at training camp every day, they're going to have been able to sort more together. But seeing how a lot of these guys respond to live action, how they respond to the competition, you've got guys who are going to be scrapping out there to keep their jobs and fight for a roster spot on this team or a spot on another team if it doesn't work out here. So I think it's very exciting. Storm, where do we want to start tonight? Do we want to start with the injury news from this week? Do we want to start with the depth chart? What are you feeling?
What did I send you? I sent you.
I mean, I can go either way. I think those are the first two things you sent me.
We can start with the injury stuff, man, because it was definitely an active week as far as injuries and signings and IR transactions and stuff like that.
So we can start there. Would you want to just briefly, for those in our audience who might not have been keeping up, would you want to tell us the key injuries that Houston has sustained over the last week here?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest one that everybody's going to, you know, hear about or has heard about already, obviously, is starting right tackle Titus Howard broke his hand Saturday night early on in practice. And unfortunately, they've lost him for what's been reported 4 to 6 weeks now after he had surgery Monday morning. He's in a cast. He was out of practice today, but, you know, he's going to be out. That's a big blow. And fortunately, you know, if there is a silver lining to this, is that it happened when it happened. He'll be able to recover and be back very early in the season. I think the latest we would see him would be week three. So, you know, that's definitely a positive. We've got George Fant that can step in and play right tackle. I'd hoped that we would see Charlie Heck early on in the season, but that's not going to happen just given he's on the pup list as well. So he's still not even practicing. And so it's going to be George Fant, and then it goes downhill from there. I'm going to pull up the depth chart real quick because half the games
escaped me at this point. Unfortunate timing here for Houston, obviously. Titus Howard is fresh off of signing his three-year, I believe, $54 million extension that placed him in the top five highest-paid right tackles in the NFL. Someone texted me. He moved his hand too quickly to sign that contract, and I was like, come on. But I do think, and like you said, it's a pretty favorable injury timeline for Titus, and he is someone obviously Houston's going to want back pretty quickly. They were looking forward to that being potentially a top five tackle duo in the NFL this season. But 4 to 6 weeks, pretty manageable. It should bring him back between sometime either the opener against the Ravens or during those first four games. Storm, how concerned are you about the Tyus?
Not at all. I mean, it's a hand injury. He broke his hand. He'll be in a cast, and you know, once he comes back, it'll be like riding a bike for him. He'll be able to just plug right back into the offense, and he was there through OTAs. He'll still be there to, you know, do walkthroughs and stuff like that. So he'll still get he'll still be able to see the offense installed and understand it. You know, it's not like a leg injury or something like that where he's not able to walk and be out on the field type of thing. And he's not on the IR. He's still active, and they're going to keep it that way because he's not going to be out long enough to where they need to make a roster move for him. So, and I think the plan right now is potentially miss week one, roll back in week two, and just hit the ground running. So I'm not concerned about it at all.
And I think I'm on the same page as you that in terms of injuries, this is an extremely favorable one to go through. It's not something that's going to affect his ability to participate with the team. It's not an injury that's going to linger with him this season. I believe he had surgery like pretty much the next day, and we officially got this 4 to 6 week timeline. And all things considered with the position he's playing, I do expect that Tyus, when he's back, will be able to come and play at the level that we've come to expect for a guy who I think most Houston fans were very excited to see Tyus Howard sign that extension just a few weeks ago. But definitely something to monitor what the right side of that offensive line could look like, especially with a Baltimore defense that, I mean, is always amongst the league's best. That's never a bad defensive team the Ravens have.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, and then today they had Jadeveon Clowney come in for a visit. So,
I swear.
You know, they may be adding another piece that, you know, we could see week one. So that'll be interesting. I'm not really worried about week one on the defense with them. I feel like if Tyus can come back, I think they'll be okay. And even if he can, I think Fant can hold his own. I trust Slowick and the guys to scheme some stuff up and keep away from that right side of the line and just, you know, move the ball more to the left side, take advantage of having Laremy Tunsil over there. And you know, maybe they'll use Damian Pierce and Singletary on some chips in the tight ends as well. So we'll be okay.
And I did like what you tweeted this week, Storm, about how the timing of this, as unfortunate as it's also somewhat favorable in that the team does have these three preseason games to see, okay, how much are we going to need to compensate for Fant being on that right side? They have time to game plan. What extra protection do we need to put on that side of the line? What plays can we run away from there if we need to? I can't imagine it being anyone that isn't George Fant on that side unless he gets injured, in which case we're going to have an entire other conversation. But part of this will be that during the preseason, we will get to see what kind of depth they have at the tackles and how they hold up in a live game situation. Because, and I'll give this question to you, it sounds coming out of camp that the depth of the O-line has not been a very impressive part. There's been a lot of things that people are walking away with, really excited with this team. Sarge, another one of our colleagues over at the Texans Wire, he tweeted, if there's any injuries this O-line, it's going to be trouble. Do you agree with that assessment? And because it did come to fruition just a week later.
Yeah, 100%, man. We got to see, you know, you'd see the twos on the offensive line, and then you'd get some Will Anderson mixed in there, some Jerry Hughes, Jonathan Gernard, Jacob Martin, and they made those guys look really bad, like really bad. So I feel like that's got to be an area that they've got to really concentrate and make sure that those guys stay healthy, because if they lose anybody else, if they lose another starter on that offensive line, it could be tough sledding ahead for a few weeks, depending on the severity of the injury. So we'll hope that doesn't happen. And just, you know, these guys can roll for 17 weeks and, you know, possibly into the playoffs if that happens, injury free.
Big if. And, you know, while we're on the topic of the offensive line, there was another injury on the offensive line, and that Scott Quessenberry went down for the season last week, which is, yep, for us, Juice Scruggs, who was picked I think was he 59th or 61st overall? 50. He was a second round pick for
something Juice. Right in that area. Yeah,
I think we all expected that Juice was going to start at some point, if not very early this season for Houston. Storm, what is your confidence meter right now with Juice Scruggs coming out of Penn State? And his, I mean, this is a rookie who's, I mean, obviously it's a big leap to the NFL. This is an offense that does put a lot of responsibility on their center, but this isn't someone Houston would have picked if they didn't feel comfortable asking him to do that. What's your confidence meter with Juice Scruggs as another guy who's stepping up in injury right now, even if we thought he would have been starting eventually?
I'm fairly confident, and seeing what he was able to do just this week in camp, after the injury to Quisenberry, he stepped up, and talking to a few people and seeing the accounts coming out of camp, he held his own. There were some good, there were some bad. He's learning. It's a tough transition coming from college to the NFL for any player, but to have to be thrust into the starting position at center, one of the key positions on this offensive line, or in any offense really. That's a difficult task, and so it's going to be something that he's going to have some ups and downs, some ebbs and flows with how things are going to play out. But I think if anybody is up to it, seeing how he played in college, I feel like he's one of those guys that can handle it pretty well. So I feel pretty confident in him. I'm not saying he's going to go out there and turn around and be what Ben Jones was when he was here, or Chris Myers, something like that. But I feel like he's somebody that can fill in and hold his own for this season, and hopefully a very long time on this offense.
Yeah, and the nice thing is they don't need him to be a world beater at center. They just need him to be a competent starter who can play to the strengths of how good the tackles are. And I think what they expect Shaq Mason to be, based on the money they're paying him, $12 million per year after that trade from Tampa, and what Kenyon Green can hopefully become after picking him 15th overall just a year ago, which can be a little crazy to think about considering how last season went. But I think a lot of optimism on this offensive line. And so I think this might be a good transition point for us to go to the unofficial depth chart, because this week Houston gave us our first look at how they're seeing the raw. I mean, that's a big how they're statement. This is more of the PR team assembling this than the coaches generally. But I do think that the depth chart can be telling these unofficial depth charts. So how do we want to do this? Do we want to go offense to defense? Do we just want to talk about what catches our eye?
We can start offense and then roll to the defense. Well, since we've been talking about the O-line so much already.
Okay, let's start offense. I mean, then just another a quick plug for anyone listening on Twitter Spaces. Again, we are live on YouTube, another Texans podcast, also going to be on Spotify and Apple Music. If you want to go like, subscribe, follow us there. We are excited to be transitioning over that platform. You can watch us on video right now and join the comment stream if you're welcome to. Storm, do we have anyone here right now?
There's 30 people on YouTube right now.
Okay. That's great. We got 30 people on Twitter, 30 people on YouTube. And without further ado, let's talk about the starting offense. Do we start at the quarterback? Can you even pretend to be surprised that CJ Stroud is named the starting quarterback?
No. I mean, given just what I saw firsthand at camp, the throws, the way he was processing the offense, the way he was processing his reads on the defense and stuff like that, the placement of the ball, the lack of, one thing that a knock that we heard coming out of college was he was afraid to pull it down and run. And we saw, and I know I saw it a few times myself, he did that. He pulled it down and took what the defense was giving him, took a few yards, and then they just rolled with it and went on to the next play. So it was good to see. It was really good to see, really refreshing to see. And not to say that Davis had a bad camp, but CJ was just definitely the better quarterback so far. And I think that CJ's done a really good job to earn the position that he has the starter. But again, not shocked. I mean, we kind of all figured that it was going to happen eventually. So
I do think that's an important caveat to mention, that there's been a lot of confusion, maybe not confusion, but some real turmoil when people talk about Davis Mills performing well in these camps. And I don't think that's a mutually exclusive thing. Both guys are allowed to succeed. And in fact, it's a good job for the team when both guys are playing well. And it's not that Davis Mills has been poor or that CJ Stroud has just been better than him. And it's a really nice thing right now. They've got two guys, and Mills might be able to build some real value here in an offense that's taking over the league. I don't think it's a far-fetched scenario that if Mills performs well this preseason, maybe after this year we could see them potentially get a draft pick for someone who's running another of this Shanahan West Coast type scheme in the league. The next guy we've got, Damian Pierce, Devin Singletary, Mike Boone. I think that's exactly as expected. Boone obviously brought in as a free agent this past offseason and kind of a priority signing for a team that values both running back depth and special teams more than your average NFL team. Damian Pierce expected to carry the rock. So I might put this to you because we were talking about this on Twitter this week, me and some of my followers, when the Pierce highlight came from camp of him catching the touchdown. What do you think that backfield split might look like? Because reading the scenario from afar, I would say that contract that Singletary was able to sign, the one-year, $3.5 million contract, was more of a priority backup contract. It's someone that they clearly wanted on this roster that they had a role for, but that's not starter money. That's not what Miles Sanders is getting in Carolina. That's not. It's more in the lines of what Dante Foreman's getting in Chicago. What do you think the backfield splits could look like this year between Damian Pierce and Devin Singletary, who are clocking in as we all expected at running back one and running back two?
I think it's going to really just be situational. I feel like Damian obviously is going to get the bulk of me. He's going to be your bell cow. But Singletary allows you to get some different looks. He's definitely the better back with his hands out of the backfield as far as pass catching. But that's an element that Damian has added to his repertoire this offseason. He's worked on it really hard. And we saw it, like you said, that one clip, we saw it. He was able to, you know, adjust his body in the air, make the catch, hold on to the ball coming to the ground. And then to the behest of the guys over at 6'10", he did the rock boy, you know. And I was right there when it happened, and they were like, no rock boy, please, no rock boy. So that was fun to see. But it's cool to see him do stuff like that. I mean, it's, you know, he's coming out because, you know, we drafted him. Everyone was like, okay, it's just another running back coming into the league. And then he was on pace to break 1,000 yards in his rookie season. He was on pace to have, you know, just a damn good season. And then he gets hurt. So we lost him and he came up just short. And he said that himself, that was one of the goals that he had set was to break 1,000 yards. And he came up short. So this year he's going to come back with a little bit more of a chip on his shoulder. And that's kind of a scary thing. Like that guy right there with a little bit more of a chip on his shoulder, he already runs really hard. He already runs like a little bowling ball. And he was running his guys over in camp. So I'm pretty excited to see what he's going to do this year with, you know, a little more attitude and more time and more experience in the league. So that'll be fun. I think so I'd say right now, to answer your question, probably about a 60-40 split. And things could change just given the situation too. You know, if the team's down by, you know, two touchdowns coming into the fourth quarter and they've got to throw the ball a little more, I think we'll see a little bit less Pierce and more Singletary unless we get, you know, Damian starts to, you know, just become super prolific with his, you know, pass catching out of the backfield. So I think that's kind of where we're at, about a 60-40 right now. And then I'd be really interested to see who they roll out as the third running back. I was kind of hoping for Dare for Ogunbowale. I think that's how you say his name. I always do his name really bad. And then a lot of people had high hopes for Mike Boone. And so we'll see. I'd be really interested to see who's going to end up as the third running back on the roster.
And I do think it's a good point that I think Singletary will have a role no matter how strong Damian Pierce plays. I just think that it's hard to imagine Pierce getting anything less than 60%, 70%, because he is just so talented. Last year we saw he has the acceleration, he has the contact balance to be a top 10 back in this league. And if he can add to his pass catching repertoire, that is a scary weapon who's going to be in a run-friendly scheme, universally considered, and the most expensive offensive line in football, which we might have some injury concerns, but this is a group that I expect to do a lot of damage in the run game. I have at least a little more confidence in the passing group. Let's talk about – I think Andrew Beckett, fullback, is what we'd expect right now. That was a day one free agent signing that didn't make a lot of sense unless – you put on your thinking cap and you're like, okay, this is a team that values versatility. This is a team that wants to use a fullback. I expect Beck to be tight end two and starting at fullback and kind of give them some versatility in that way. But where it gets interesting is this receiver group. So we've got – they only listed two starting receivers on the depth chart. They've got Robert Woods and Nico Collins, followed by – and I think this one surprised a lot of people – Noah Brown. And Noah Brown has had an exceptional camp. He's a guy who can block really well. He's a guy who is coming in with just a little bit more experience than the guys behind him on the depth chart, and Tank Dell, John Mechie, Xavier Hutchinson. Were you surprised that the receiver depth chart looked this way, or was this about what you expected?
Yeah, a little bit. I would have thought that they would maybe roll out three starting, you know, if they did the X, Y, and Z type of thing. But kind of where they're at, I mean, I get the Mechie maybe behind Noah Brown if they're going to be a little more cautious with him coming off of, you know, the leukemia and, you know, not playing last season. That's kind of a little bit understandable. But like you said, he's had a hell of a camp. So I feel like that he's definitely earned the right to be a little bit higher on the depth chart. I would have liked to see him over Noah Brown. But I'm not mad at it. And I feel like the top six guys that they have listed is right. Like, I feel like that's going to be your main six guys. They may slip a seventh one in there depending on, you know, how they construct the roster. I don't know how – I'd have to go back and look and see how San Francisco has rolled with their wide receiver groups and try to kind of get an idea of how Sloak would do it. Because I know we were talking the other day in the chat, we were talking about like the offensive line and how many guys they rolled there and the defensive line and stuff like that. So it'd be interesting to see how they adjust that group. But the top six is not, you know, it's not shocking to me at all, really.
Before training camp started, I took a look at what San Francisco's roster looks like last year, and I tried to predict the 53. And I went with six wide receivers, and these are the six guys I went with. I think they are the most talented of the group, and I think they're pretty versatile in that. And something I tweeted about today, and something that I might tell anyone who's saying, hey, why isn't John Mechie higher? Hey, how is Xavier Hutchinson going to see the field? If you think about these guys and that Xavier Hutchinson would play the same spot on the field as a Noah Brown, and that John Mechie would play that wide receiver as a Robert Woods type, depending on how the season goes and how these young guys come along, what Houston's done is – I think they have some immediate impact veterans in Robert Woods and Noah Brown, but neither of them have the stature or a contract status that prevents you from transitioning to those young guys when they're ready.
Yeah.
So I think Nico might stay in that spot, but when you're ready to get, you know, John Mechie on the field more, you can start to dial back on Robert Woods. When you want to get Xavier Hutchinson more, like, you can get him on the opposite boundary instead of Noah Brown. And I don't, you know, I've been pretty skeptical of how this wide receiver group was going to look, and all of the camp reports have been pretty encouraging in that way. And kind of seeing this depth chart this week and thinking about it in that way, it gave me a little more peace of mind than maybe I felt about a month and a half ago.
Yeah, and seeing firsthand the way Hutchinson was in camp, steal in the sixth round, man. If he can carry the same production. Into the season and go out there, and if he puts up 600 yards as a six round wide receiver and sprinkles in a couple touchdowns, man, that's a hit. You know, that's a hit on a six round draft pick. Obviously, you're gonna have Tank Dell, Mechie, and Noah Brown. Noah coming in as a free agent, you know, signing on a relatively inexpensive contract. Like you said, you know, something that they wouldn't be afraid to move on from him or move away from him and just bump him down the depth chart type of thing. So it's kind of one of the groups that I'm a little more excited now that we've seen them roll through camp and stuff like that. I'm a little more excited to see them actually take the field in live action and see how this, how Sloak and staff can scheme these guys and, you know, make some plays.
Yeah. I was talking to someone they've been at camp every day, and the way they described the offense to me, they said what they're trying to do is ambitious. And it's betting on themselves, but they really believe that they can make this work and that they have the pieces that, I mean, could it look better? I think in the future, yes, and it will. But for now, they have everything they need to hit the ground running for year one. The reports out of training camp about this receiver group seem to reflect that line of thinking pretty well, that Houston thinks they can pull this off with this group. And it's something I'm very excited about to watch on Thursday night against what is a stout New England defense, a disciplined group. Let's skip the offensive line because we just talked about that a good bit with the injuries and talk about the defense. But before we go over there, I do want to do justice to our YouTube audience. Any comments or anything in the chat that we want to address?
Let's see. Jaleel Johnson, says he's not shocked Noah's going to be the sixth wide receiver. A bunch of the guys from Jordan's Discord going back and forth and throwing jabs at each other.
We'll take it.
Always appreciate those guys. They're great people.
They
Thanks
are.
For coming by, guys. Let's see. That's really about it. I mean, it's just a lot of them back and forth. Joey showing some love. Thanks, Joey.
And again, for anyone on Twitter, thank you for listening. Welcome to join us on YouTube. If you want to watch the live feed at Another Texans Podcast, you'll be able to find the whole show on Spotify and Apple Music if you're tuning in a little late here. Storm, let's move to the defense. Because sure. That's supposed to be Houston's best unit. We're starting to get a little love nationally. You hear the guys at The Athletic this week talking about, does Houston have the opportunity to be a top 10 defense? On the defensive line, Will Anderson, Malik Collins, Sheldon Rankins, Jonathan Grenard. I think these are the four guys that, I mean, ever since the draft ended, this would be the defensive line in D'Amico Ryan's front. Did anything surprise you looking at this group or looking at the depth of this group?
A little bit. I was, and we talked about this the other day when Cody was doing, and to be fair, I'm going to give Cody his credit because he nailed this. When Cody had his depth chart that morning, and he sent it to us and asked us what we thought about it, and he nailed the front four, like to a T. He had Anderson, Malik Collins, Sheldon, and Jonathan Grenard. And I thought maybe Jerry Hughes would get the edge over Grenard just because of being a veteran, but they went with the youth and they put Grenard out there, and so we'll see what happens. That front four is very formidable. It's very exciting. And seeing what they were doing at camp, even against the ones, and Will Anderson has probably got me the most excited out of any player on this roster right now, and I feel like that's going to be a lot of people after they see him take some live action snaps. It's going to be fun, man.
Would you want to say a little more about that? What exactly has you so excited about Will, and just how good do you think he could be during the rookie year?
Man, I don't want to jinx him or anything like that, but I honestly feel like he can maybe possibly touch double digit sacks. And I know that's a big.
They haven't had a double digit sack guy since 2019.
Yeah, so that's a pretty bold prediction, right? That's pretty bold. And so I feel like, but if anybody's going to do it, it's going to be him. Just the way this guy was flying off the edge and getting in the backfield like that. Like, it was so fast. And he just – and the confidence that he was exuding out there on the field, it felt like he had been in the NFL for 5 years already. He was flying around. He's talking trash and just making guys look bad, making guys look really bad. And he had his reps where, Tunsil and Titus kind of locked him up, and that's going to happen, right? Like, he's not going to win every single battle that he goes into. So, you know, you got to take the good with the bad, but I feel like there was a lot more good than there was bad out of him. So, yeah.
I mean, I don't think double-digit sacks is out of reach for a guy that there's a reason he was picked. He was the first non-quarterback in the draft. There's a reason that Houston was willing to part with this kind of draft capital. This is someone who – I think we should expect to play close to 100% of the snaps on defense this season, assuming he stays healthy. And this is a scheme that D'Amico Ryans gets the best out of his defensive line. That really was the engine of his team in San Francisco. I mean, of course, all around a great unit, but everything in his defense starts with the front four, and there's a reason that he tabbed Will Anderson. Is that's the guy that I need for this all to start working in year one. Another thing that I noticed and that I do like about having Grenard starting is that, and I'd like to hear your opinion on these guys. I think it puts Jacob Martin and Jerry Hughes, they're the next listed edge rushers. I think it puts them in a position to be much more effective when they're not every down players. And I tweeted this back when Jacob Martin signed with the Texans. I said, your roster's in a much healthier spot when you're talking about Jacob Martin as a will he make the team and good depth for the defensive end group than as a every down player. How have those guys looked, and where do you think they factor into this equation?
I feel like Jerry has looked as good as he did last year. Jerry came in and did a lot of really good things for this team. And, you know, like this comment right here that just came in, he had 9 sacks last year.
He was a stud.
On a very bad defense, right? Like, he was the one outside of Petrie and the bright spots of Stingley and the little bit that we saw of Christian Harris. Jerry Hughes was the lone guy really that was out there making a huge impact on the defense. And so I feel like another year on this team, obviously the defense is going to change a little bit, but adding some other talent around him, it's going to take some pressure off of him. And now it's going to allow him to potentially, you know, just feast a little bit better on this defense and make even more of an impact. And maybe he only does, he doesn't get 10 sacks. Maybe he doesn't even get nine again, but if he goes out there and gets seven and, you know, just continues to have a decently successful year while allowing some of these other guys to go out there and have really good success, then, you know, it's well worth it. Yeah. Just as veteran leadership alone, being in that room and talking with guys like Jacob Martin and Jonathan Grenard and especially Will Anderson is huge, man. It's invaluable. Those two have clicked really well. Jerry Hughes and Will Anderson have clicked. When they interviewed Jerry back a couple days ago, what was it, the Sunday practice? So day four, I think it was, at camp. Nothing but high praise. Nothing but high praise of Will Anderson. So, I mean, not that we would expect any less, right? He's not going to go out there and you know, say the guy sucks or anything. But it was a lot of really good praise and, you know, something that I'm really excited about. And I just I'm excited to see that group. I really am.
And something I follow with praise of young players is, of course, like you said, they're never going to say, hey, he's terrible, we missed on a pick. But you can watch for how much praise they give a player. And the way that this Texans staff and the way that the overall roster talks about Will Anderson and CJ Stroud, they do not have to be hyping these guys up to the degree that they are. Some of these compliments that they're serving, that is not just banter. I think that is legitimately earned praise that these, like, they're impressed. This is, it doesn't have to look this way. I think the early returns on Houston sound very good coming out of camp. And again, putting Will Anderson in this, it's going to make everyone more effective. It means Jerry Hughes and Jonathan Grenard, they can both play a little less. When they're on the field, they're going to be more energized and be able to attack. I think it means you can get the best out of a Jacob Martin. I'm excited about that defensive line group and what D'Amico Ryan's going to be able to do. We'll see how Sheldon Rankins and Malik Collins will play. I think we know what Malik Collins is at this point. I'll be excited to see Rankins in this system. I know he is not. I know he was late coming to practice, and we haven't really seen him yet in a Texans uniform. That'll be someone I'm looking out for as they play the Patriots this week. Storm, you okay? If anyone,
I'm great. Damn it. I'm watching the Astros game, bro. Yordan just –
We're on these feeds. I think that's fine. You know, I think half of our listeners are probably watching the Astros while they're listening to us. For anyone who is on Twitter, Storm's mouth was just like gaped open, like watching off the screen, and I was like, something is happening. Are the Astros coming back? Are they going to win?
They're down 6-3. It's the bottom. I think it's the ninth. I can't really read the score from here, but it's the bottom of the ninth, and they're down 6-3. There was two on top of the ninth. Yeah, because they're playing in Camden Yards. But Yordan almost hit another home run. He got robbed of one earlier, and then he was maybe a foot short of tying the game with one out. God, bro.
All right, let's talk about these linebackers. No, it's totally fine. I want to make sure that we get through this depth chart. There's not going to be a lot to say about the secondary. So I think this linebacker discussion will be the last thing we talk about from the depth chart before we address the upcoming game against New England. They came out as expected, except for one spot. So we saw Christian Harris at the weak side linebacker. Christian Harris is the guy who has not come off the field during camp. That is someone that is supposed to take a huge leap forward under D'Amico Ryans and having a full offseason under his belt now in his second year from Bama. Denzel Perryman, someone that the Texans valued in free agency. They went after him pretty hard, and he was brought in to start at middle linebacker. No surprise he's listed as the starting middle linebacker. But Blake Cashman, a forgotten player who I think a lot of people might have said, I don't know if he'll make the team, has had a phenomenal camp. He's listed as the starting strong side linebacker. Storm, how do you feel about this group compared to where we were coming into camp and what they could look like under D'Amico Ryans in this defense?
I feel a lot better about it. A lot. Seeing the way Cashman has carried himself in camp, the plays he's made, he's been super disruptive, both at the line of scrimmage and in coverage. So it's one of those things that was an element to this defense that's really been lacking the past several years is coverage from linebackers. And now if you've got Cashman able to cover, Christian Harris is able to cover, Joey, I'm going to I'm blocked, Joey. Joey sent me a message saying Tucker Grand Slam. I had to look. Sorry. So you got Harris going into coverage. Cashman can go into coverage. And then we even saw a tweet today from Brooks from the Chronicle saying that he saw Will Anderson drop into coverage and go stride for stride with Damian Pierce. So I feel a lot better about this group if we've got linebackers that can hang with running backs and tight ends alike, to where it's just not going to have free run in the middle of the field like we've seen over the past few years. Because with Lovie's defense, that was the area that just killed us, man. Like, just absolutely killed this team, was constant momentum killers and just heartbreakers play after play when a tight end or a running back could just settle into the middle of this defense and pick up 10 yards.
And I might argue that the run game from the linebackers was worse than the passing game, which is really saying something. Because, I mean, that is, you know, everyone talks about Jalen Petrie's numbers. The reason he had 140 tackles is that we had nobody at the second level who would clean up. The gap responsibility, it was terrible last year, or they were missing tackles. And this is a group that I think is overall, like you said, I think they're more athletic, they're faster, which lends itself to coverage. But I also think it lends itself just to everything about D'Amico Ryan's defense, about playing fast and playing downhill. And these are guys who are going to swarm, love getting to drop that word, but really just flow towards the football. And I think make some impact plays in the running game, make life a little easier for Jalen Petrie and Jimmy Ward on the back end there.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, Jimmy Ward is another guy that they can plug all over this defense, and he can, and same with Petrie. So there's so many different options now for this, for the defensive coordinators to just go out there and wreak havoc against other opponents.
You're so distracted by this baseball.
Sorry, man. It's
it's okay.
It's good. I'm not even an Astros fan, but you know,
who doesn't love
them? So it's good. It's just, they're fun to watch, man. Plus, but the Orioles are in the Red Sox division, so I want the Orioles to lose like really bad.
That's fair.
But yeah, so like there's just some guys that you can almost like gadget. They're almost like gadget guys on this defense now that you're going to be able to do so many different things with that. It's going to be really fun to watch. And I want to see them go out there and just smash quarterbacks on Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, and then if we transition to the secondary, for anyone listening, Derek Stingley, Steven Nelson named as the starting corners for the team. I don't think that's surprising for anybody, alongside Jimmy Ward and Jalen Petrie at the two safety spots.
Yep.
Pretty much chalk there, no surprises. MJ Stewart, Eric Murray, backup safeties. Shaq Griffin comes in as the third outside corner with Desmond King and Tavier Thomas filling in the slot. I want to transition to the New England game, and there's a lot we could talk about with that. Well, first, do we have any comments about the defensive depth chart in the YouTube? In the
Joey caught it. Tucker Grand Slam. Let's go. Astros are in the lead now. Good job, Joey. Good job, Joey. Look, he called it right there.
That's pretty phenomenal. I'm kind of upset I'm not watching the game now.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I mean, I don't even know what New England's plan is. I haven't seen any reports coming out of what their plan is for this game. Who's going to start? How many, you know, if the starters are going to play, what? Let's see. We can see.
Who is one player that you are excited to watch in the preseason game? And let's say, just for interest sake, who is a non-starter? So somebody who's going to get some serious run in this game that you want to see against New England and think that they can maybe make a name for themselves on this defense or this offense, and maybe that'll work itself into a larger role as we get to the season. Who do you want to watch?
Man, I really wanted to see Teagan healthy and active, and obviously we're not going to see that. I want to see what they do with Eric Tomlinson. I feel like that's a guy that may sneak onto the 53.
Eric Tomlinson, he would be the fourth string tight end?
Third. I mean, I feel like they're going to carry three, and then they'll have Beckett fullback. But I feel like Tomlinson could be the guy that could potentially upset and remove Brevin Jordan off this roster.
Okay. And that was going to be a follow-up question. Do you think Brevin Jordan's time on this roster is looking likely over?
It's tough, man, because he can't stay healthy. When he's on the field, he does some really good things. There's some aspects to his game that he's really lacking. The blocking is one of them. He's a phenomenal pass catcher, but Eric Tomlinson gives you pass catching ability, plus he gives you inline blocking, and something that this offense is really going to need. So I feel like that's just going to be one thing that to watch over these next few weeks, because there's, I'm going to count the tight ends. There is 1, 2, 3, 4. Wait, there was more. I thought there was like 7 or 8 tight ends on the depth chart when I first got it.
I do think you have to include Andrew Beck in that group, because it sounds like they're not afraid to play him in line as well as at the fullback position.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just one of those things that is that another home run? Or is it a replay? That's the group that I'm really watching to kind of see how things are going to unfold. I feel like Tomlinson is going to be that guy that, you know, can really do some, you know, some shaking on this offense on the depth chart. And I think Teagan did enough. I can't really say he did enough last year because he hardly even played and we barely saw him. But the little bit that we did see out of him, there was some really good stuff from Teagan Quatoriano. And I feel like Brevin has not done enough in his time here to.
I think Teagan has flashed more in 1 year than we've seen from Brevin in 2 whole seasons at this point.
And yeah,
that's miraculous considering how little talent was ahead of Brevin Jordan in the receiving group the last 2 years. For a receiving tight end, I would have expected to see more. I don't think it's unfair to say he's looking like the odd man out unless he proves to be a different player this preseason than the one that we've watched the last 2 years.
For sure. Storm, what about you? Guy, what about you? Who are you excited?
And I'm really pumped to talk about this guy. I want to see Henry Toa. So let me preface this, y'all. So last night on the SEC Network, they were replaying the 2021 College Football National Championship. That was 3-seed Georgia versus 1-seed Alabama. This is an Alabama team that had Will Anderson. It had Christian Harris. You had John Mechie, obviously Jameson Williams. You had the Heisman winner, Bryce Young, on this team. But you know who kept catching my eye watching this game? And you know, it's someone that I wouldn't have noticed at the time. Henry Toa, and he's everywhere. He's like you're watching Will Anderson flush the pocket, and Toa is there. And this is a guy who at camp has been playing really well, someone that people who are there every day say that he is going to challenge for – real snaps on this defense. He may not be with the starters, but this is someone who has picked up things really quickly. I mean, going back to as soon as the draft finished, this is a player that Nick Caserio said, we've been really impressed with him in the building in rookie minicamp, which is how he was acclimating himself. And then you fast forward to training camp, and this is someone who is playing better than a fourth round or fifth round rookie linebacker that you would expect. So I want to see what he can do, because I don't think, and this kind of goes back to what I said about the receiver group, I don't think this is a team that's going to be afraid to go with the youth movement as soon as guys prove that they're ready to take those roles. They know, I think this is a team that they're not going to sacrifice wins. They're not willing to tank in a way that I guess last year's team didn't really tank. They were just so incompetent. It kind of worked out that way. But I don't think this is a team that's willing to give up wins to get their young guys on the field. But I think as soon as their young guys hit a certain level, we're going to start to watch them go that way. And number 10 is, I mean, Henry Toto is someone that I think could go that direction this season as it progresses. And I think that's going to start with a potentially strong preseason showing when he's more talented than a lot of the guys who are going to be on the field with him.
Yeah. Henry was doing some really good stuff in camp. I got to see him a few times and he was making some coverage plays. He was making some plays at the line of scrimmage. And so that I agree. That's somebody that I'm pretty excited about as well. So,
yeah,
I'm right there with you.
All right. I think we should wrap this up. Storm. Well, first, actually, we do have to talk about, because we do have a Twitter audience and I kind of want to make funny about this. You're at 10K on Twitter. How does it feel?
Man, thank you. Because I knew I was getting close, but I didn't like I'm not the type to go out there and beg for followers. And that was kind of cool that you did it and was able to, I had kind of had that goal to push it, to get over that mark before the season started. So getting there before the preseason even really kicks off is kind of cool, man. So that's a big milestone, like 10,000 followers. That's a lot of people. So I gotta get it caught up to the Instagram for sure.
You'll get there. I mean, you do have a lot of Instagram followers, though. It's not going to happen overnight, but you'll get there. No. You'll get there. Well, guys, and again, Storm, where can they find those 10,000 other people that have flocked to see your insights on the Houston Texans and your general banter? Mostly general banter.
Yeah, it's been a lot of general banter. On Twitter, it's at PatrickStormHTX. Same thing on Instagram. In my Twitter bio is the link to my Substack where I do some writing every now and then. Occasionally, we'll throw a piece at the Texans Wire and Fox Sports, depending on how things are going. And eventually, once the season kicks off, that's going to be, you know, there's going to be a lot more content. It's been kind of one of those off seasons where I just had not had time to write about anything, considering how this off season went. I wish I had done a lot more. So, but yeah, that's where it's all at, man. And then obviously here on YouTube, another Texans podcast. Guys, drop a subscription, like this video, share it. It's really going to help the channel grow. And I think we're after one video last week and now this week, where are we at? We're at 421 subscribers already on YouTube, John. So yep. I think that's pretty damn good considering.
Yep. It's a huge turnout. And thank you guys for being so receptive to the show. We really enjoyed the spaces we were doing last season and for the spring. And we're excited to have a permanent home and a permanent platform to keep bringing this. And soon we're going to start to bring on some of the guests that we generally had on Twitter spaces, but we're trying to get our groove here first. If you're not, go ahead and follow me at John H. Crumpler on Twitter, or I guess it's now called X. Thank you, Elon. And make sure you're following the show at Another Texans Podcast. I really appreciate having you guys. And we will be back probably sometime this weekend to break down Houston's preseason game against the Patriots. We'll see how the team does. And thanks for tuning in. Go Texans.